and welcome to episode 138 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Elizabeth, and I am joined by fellow Outlander agents Laura, Sandy, Lindsay, and we are also excited to welcome back Andy, one of our newest agents. Yay! Hi, Andy!
Hi!
One of the best ways to immerse yourself in a culture is to partake in some of the local cuisine. That's a hard word to say sometimes, cuisine. Fans of this podcast know that we sometimes get a little carried away when we talk about food or drinks on our trips, so we're going to give it a whole episode. We thought it'd be fun to highlight some foodie options that you might not have realized were out there and how they can add to your experience. Our mouths are watering just thinking about it, so let's get started. So let's just get the one that we're most of us are most familiar with just out of the way. We'll just go ahead and talk about it because everybody knows we're going to talk about it. So let's just talk about it, which is the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival.
Yay. Yeah.
So Lindsay, fun facts, Lindsay wants to share how many times she has been to the festival in the last 10 years.
I have been every single year since 2007. And then like when I go, I pretend I live there. For like 2 to 3 weeks and just stuff my face. It's you know, you get the book and then you just sit there and plan out like I gotta have this and I gotta have this, and you have to have enough days to try everything because you can't, if you try and try everything in one day, you're gonna kill yourself.
Or one weekend, really. It's very hard.
And I seem to remember, Andy, when
we
booked your first trip a few years ago, your engagement trip, didn't you have like the deluxe dining plan and food and wine festival to go to?
Yes, I still feel full.
How did you survive? I did it with the dining plan once, and that was like, I was in pain.
We were literally just eating. I mean, that entire trip was planned around food. It's like, okay, so we're going to go to a ride. Well, now it's time to eat again. It's like, okay.
You're like, let me walk through this queue really slowly so that I can make room.
By the end of this.
I'm guessing Mission Space was not on your...
No. No, Spaceship Earth was. That was something that was kind of passed out.
Yeah.
Especially when you eat something that's really good and you get the... I know everybody knows tryptophan and turkey, but I think if you eat anything and you get that satiated feeling, you just want to fall asleep.
Well, and then there's that mixture of the Florida heat along with jumping into an air conditioned room that will just, you know, you're all sweaty and everything, and then you've got the cool air and out.
Yeah, just head over to Universe of Energy.
Yes.
45 minutes long.
Yes. And those little slow moving trams.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a side note question from someone who has not been to Disney as many times as you guys have been to Disney. The Food and Wine Festival, do you use your dining plan for it, or do you have to pay money, or how does that work?
Super good.
You can use your snack credits, and it's an excellent use of snack credits for the items that are higher dollars. So if you're a cheapie like me, you run around with your little notebook and you kind of look at the, $7. That's a good one to use. That's a great strategy too for, they offer the, for Food and Wine Festival, they do now where you can buy a lanyard with, little rip-off coupons. For tastes around the world showcase, and you want to really plot out to get your best dollar amount out of them to use them on the highest thing you're allowed to use them on.
You almost use them as tokens, right?
Yeah.
You can also switch your counter service. You can take a counter service and turn it into 3 snacks, which is not actually the best use of your counter service.
No.
But it's possible.
That's why they let you do it.
If you find yourself like with all these credits left over, I did it with I had my twins with me and they kept wanting the same thing over and over again. So we did that a few times.
Yes. When you have lots and lots of extra credits at the end, sometimes you just do that and get maybe 2 water bottles and a snack.
Exactly. They're easier to take on a plane if you happen to be flying. Yeah. So actually that is a good question, Laura. And then you can actually mix and match. So you can use your snack credits for some, and then when you run out of snack credits or whatever, then you can use cash. And with the Magic Band, it's a lot easier because you're not, it used to be like you're always swiping a card or whatever, and it just took forever.
A lot easier.
It's so it's like disgustingly
dangerous.
Yes, dangerously easy.
Way too easy. Actually, I don't find a card hard. I put money on a gift card, and I use a gift card for everything.
That is better. It was when people were using credit cards for each transaction or whatever. So I don't want to talk too much about the Food and Wine Festival because we've done a whole episode on it before, and it's very likely we will do another episode on it again.
We're going again, right?
Yes.
Outlander will be there this November. So
does the calendar roll over?
But yeah, I think that if you are a foodie, it's a great like one-stop shop because you get to try food from all around the world. And you may say, well, Epcot always has World Showcase, and that is very true, but these are little kiosks with sort of grab and go quick snacks, and many of them are countries that are not normally
it's 30 plus extra kiosks, so and they also have stuff like the brewer's one. There's a beer walk kind of
and
thing.
the burgers and all the specialty food.
What's the show the Chew? If you're a fan of that show, the Chew, the hosts go down there and there's other stuff too. There's like
celebrity chefs.
Celebrity chefs
and all the tastings that you can do and all of that. But also stepping away from Epcot. Just a little ways away is Food and Wine Classic for In Between the Swan and Dolphin. And that's every single year now for the past, I don't even know how many years they've been doing that, but that's a fantastic, fantastic.
Lindsay, I didn't think you were going to tell anybody about
that. That's the second time you've talked about it on the podcast.
I don't really want to share too many details because it's like my favorite thing to do every year, but you have an option to buy a bracelet and pay one price for the entire evening and then eat and drink your little hearts. You're out around, you know, in the causeway there. And it's a fantastic time. So
if people are really resourceful, we won't tell them when it is. They can go find
it. Yeah. No, they got to call one of us. They got to call one of us.
So let's talk about some other places you can go, because there are other places in the world than Walt Disney World. No, although they do have some very famous dishes there. So the burger, is it, with the French fries on it?
Oh, the Permanente Brothers sandwiches. Yeah, there's Permantes. There's pierogies.
Oh,
there's,
get me to eat.
Come
that.
On, Heinz ketchup.
That probably is the one thing I will give Pittsburgh credit for. That and the penguins.
Heinz ketchup?
No, well, the food aspect. But that actually only goes to prove really what I was going to say, which is you can pretty much go anywhere and make it a foodie vacation, even someplace like Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, though, to be fair, has a lot of ethnic neighborhoods. So there's a big fusion of different cultures and stuff. There's, you know, Jewish neighborhoods, and then there's Polish neighborhoods and the German neighborhoods. I mean, there's all that stuff.
So. And a lot of big cities have that. So what are some ways that you guys have made your vacation a foodie vacation, even if it wasn't necessarily the intent for it to be that?
Hard to say. I plan most of our vacations around the meal.
Every single vacation is all about the food. That's the first thing I do. I start Googling what's the best thing to eat here. Went to Atlanta and it was so hard.
Gladys Knight chicken and waffles in Atlanta. Mm-hmm.
It was so hard to narrow them down. Yeah. I only had so many. I think I was there for like 9 nights and I was like, I only have 9 opportunities to eat.
So here's my suggestion for that. And I know you guys also have a suggestion of what you do, but I've actually found that Yelp is a huge, fantastic source for finding, you know, if you're in a really big city, Paris, London, Atlanta, San Francisco, and you're walking around and you're like, oh, I'm feeling a little bit peckish, to be able to go onto Yelp and actually just say, what's near me, and look at the reviews, you can find some real hidden gems. And it's really easy to tell from the Yelp reviews who's going. Is it locals or is it tourists? And you can really find some amazing things. That's actually how we found this pub in London that was, I mean, there is no way, we would not have just walked past it because it was like down a back alley. You know, I was like, where are you taking us? Because we were with friends and they were just following their little Yelp, you know, map. And, but we went in and I think it was called the Lamb and the something. I have it written down because we will go back there. And it was a Sunday, and the Sunday roast, I've talked about this before, was to die for. It was amazingly good. And there, we were near the British Museum. So there were a million pubs, all of which were clearly catering to people who were visiting. And this place has been there since Queen Elizabeth II. I mean, the first. Nice. With Queen Elizabeth II is still there.
Really?
The first. The first one. I know my history. I really do.
That's what we did on our trip to Baltimore, is how we began to.
I had no idea. Laura, you guys made that trip so much fun for me because I had no idea I was going to eat so good in Baltimore.
So, Laura, how did you eat?
One of the restaurants was a very nice restaurant, kind of in what used to be a not as nice area of Baltimore that is now really fun and kind of artsy. And mm-hmm. I mean, I could have hung out there. It was really, really fun. And it reminds me a little bit of like an old neighborhood that's kind of been restored and. But anyhow, and then the place we ate the second night was in a not-so-good neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was this little tiny hole-in-the-wall place. And you don't usually hear these two terms together, but the hole-in-the-wall place that served crabs.
Are in Baltimore, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, but I mean, hole in the wall.
Yeah.
There
was no place for us to wait. There was a 30-minute wait, and there was no place. You had to go across the street to the bar. And apparently it happened so often that the bar had menus from the restaurant because there were used to people sitting there looking and waiting.
Nine times out of ten, it's going to be that shanty on the side of the road that you're like, boy, the health inspector hasn't been here. that has the best, absolute best food. And that's my husband and I have done that throughout all the world, following locals to those places.
So, yeah, Laura, how did you find those places?
With Yelp. That's how Becky and I started going back. We both looked on Yelp. We both looked around. And actually, when we were in the conference that Sandy and I were at, the leader asked locals where to go. And we decided to not follow where the leader said.
Yeah.
Because we thought, you know, everybody's kind of picking up on that. And that we were really kind of convinced. And Becky had said, and Becky's not usually like a dive. You would look at her and think, oh, this woman hangs out in little dive bars. But she said, this is going to be really like a dive bar. And she wouldn't get it. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But the place that we went to the first night, you know, is a kind of giveaway I'll get, and the name of it is Bertha's. And the only thing I'll tell you is, if you like mussels,
oh God, yeah,
you have never had mussels like they serve at Bertha's. They were literally as big as two Oreos put together.
I live a stone's throw away from Penn Cove.
I mean, they were huge.
Yeah, talking seafood with Lindsay probably is not impressing her very much.
I know, but they were huge, and they were, well, Sandy had them too.
I mean, I grew up around seafood. It was good. It was really good.
So, Andy, I think you're about to say something.
About eight versus mussels or something.
I got to write it down.
Andy, what were you about to say? Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that whether it's a hole in the wall or not, I always try to have the rule that we don't eat any chain food whenever we go anywhere, unless it's like a chain that you can't have anywhere else. Like when we go to Nebraska, there's a little fast food restaurant called Runza, and you can only find it out there. And there are these little enclosed patties with a beef mixture, and it's kind of like a hamburger, but they're phenomenal. We never miss it when we go there. But other than that, it has to be something that's completely local, something you won't find at home. That's our biggest rule.
I agree 100%. Nothing hurts my heart more than when you're on a trip somewhere, no matter what it's for, and someone's like, let's go eat at insert chain restaurant.
One rule that they told us in France, that our guide gave us the first day, she said, when you go to a restaurant, she said, all the food in Paris is going to be good, but when you go to a restaurant, look at their menu, and if their menu is more than one page long, the food's probably frozen. But if it's only a page long, it's probably fresh, which is one of those things I'm like, why has nobody ever said this to me before? It's totally obvious.
Yeah. Because you go to some places and it's like a book.
Yeah. You know, the Cheesecake Factory. Guess what, folks? They don't make that fresh in the kitchen. I know it surprises you, but.
Another rule I've heard that is, if you go somewhere frequently and they're never out of anything, they overbuy. Or again, it's frozen. You want something that the special things run out because they're getting it fresh. They're getting it local. It's not going to be for everyone.
You're getting it fresh. You want that, I'll be here by, they open it at 10 and be here by 10:01, or you're not getting that donut that everybody in the world is about. Like, yeah. I just had happen in Anchorage. I had to go 3 times to get this amazing donut.
Wow.
But it was totally worth it to get it.
At least it is worth it.
Yeah. And, yeah, you want that. It's not. Go ahead.
Misses are worth it too. I think that's a really important thing to say is this actually just happened to me in Boston. We went to 2 different sort of hole in the wall seafood places. One was one we found on Yelp that was very popular. There was a line out the door for it. We had to wait a long time to get in. There was no space really to sit. We actually had to sit outside and it was cold. So I was grumpy about it. I got lobster mac and cheese, which honestly is like one of the best things in the world, right? It wasn't very good. The lobster was really overcooked and it was in the harbor area. So I know those lobsters didn't travel very far. They probably walked to the restaurant from wherever they were. So maybe that's why they're a little chewy. But we all sort of agreed that, you know, this isn't really all that good. I mean, it wasn't all that impressive. And then, a few days later, we actually were staying in the harbor and, on the way to the aquarium, oddly enough, there was this little shack that we discovered later there was probably a restaurant there that had been torn down.
You should always
and
do.
So, yeah, so it was in a trailer, and you walk in, and there are like there was a lobster crawling across the tank to look at me. You know, like there in the crab, there's a little section of crabs, a little section of lobsters. Some of them were sleeping, some of them were really active. And you go up to the counter, and they only had like 4 things. And then you could buy seafood, you know, to take with you. But, like meal-wise, they had a couple of soups, including chowder. And then they had lobster mac and cheese. And I got the lobster mac and cheese, and it was absolutely delicious. So it's kind of interesting to compare those two. You know, we found that one just by happenstance.
Yeah.
And the other one we found on Yelp, and it was very popular, but didn't really live up, you know. And it could have just been a bad day, for sure. But
Yeah.
Totally worth taking the risks. So another way to find food in cities.
Well, this is one that I guess when we were talking before the show started, everyone knew this but me, but when we were in Baltimore, Donna, another agent, taught me to Google diners, drive-ins, and dives. And my husband watches that show all the time, and I didn't realize that that's how you found, you know, it's a really good way to find all the places that have been featured on that show in whatever city. And they do go to every city. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go all over the place. Mm-hmm. So
to build onto that, you don't want to just Google them. You want to Google Food Network. And you want to, like, I always Google Anthony Bourdain.
The only problem I've had with the Bourdain selections is the lines are 2 hours long at every single freaking one of them.
Because it's worth it. I'm going to tell you right now, if it's a crappy looking place that looks like it needs a health evaluation and the line is around the block and there are people in their pajamas in the snow in Chicago standing there for hours to get it, it's something you want to put in your mouth.
Sounds like the little barbecue place we found in Tennessee. It was the same thing. We thought we were going to end up, I don't know, in the lake or in someone's house, driving down this little tiny dirt road. It's like, where the heck are we? And we find this place, and every time we're in the area, we have to go back. It's just incredible, incredible food.
Nice.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to wait for 2 hours.
I don't. Although, ironically, when I was in Amsterdam, there was right around the corner from our hotel, this little chain that he had featured on his layover show, I think. You know, he had that layover thing. And basically, it's a chain in Amsterdam that does fast food where it's from like almost vending machines. So you go in and almost all of it is brown or yellow. And you go in and a lot of it is like deep fried somethings. And you go in, you pull it out of a window, you know, like you die and then you go, I think you go heat it up. I was not brave enough to try it. And I 80% regret that decision, but I could never, we walked by it every single time we went anywhere. We walked right by it and I kept looking at it. No lines, could have done it. So that was the one time that I could have taken an Anthony Bourdain advice and tried it because he did it. He was like, it's not bad for what it is. So it wasn't even a glowing review, but I'm like, at least I could have eaten something that Anthony Bourdain ate. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I chickened out on that one.
So another thing, talking about looking at Yelp and looking at all the things that you can find online, I know that you touched on like locals, but sometimes, and now living in the Pacific Northwest, this has become even more of, I understand now why this is true, locals will keep things close to the vest. like the best coffee place, the best place to get food. They don't want the tourists there. Mm-hmm. Usually they're not going to tell you. It's like information you got to pry. It took me 3 years of living out here to find the most amazing place in the world on the island to go get coffee and food.
What, did they keep sending you to Starbucks?
No, but you know, pretty much. Like it's not like people intentionally do it, although sometimes maybe on the West Coast it is. I don't know. But people kind of keep those things guarded. So like that food truck that only pops up at like 2 p.m. on a Thursday or whatever, you really kind of have to do some crowdsourcing to find those things out. And I found a lot of Facebook groups, a lot of local, if you can get on a local buy sell trade page in a place where you're traveling that you've never been before, if you send a message, you're like, hey, what do you recommend for, you know, here or for there? And if you can get like those local people, my husband and I would follow work trucks, like stalkers. And a lot of times, like in Aruba, it panned out, we got some crappy little shanty shack with like, she like literally popped the tin up with a stick. The tin roof or door up, and like was serving carne something out of there, and it was fantastic. It was the best thing we ate in Aruba, which is saying a lot because there's
a work truck.
A work truck where people, construction workers or whatever, yeah.
Construction workers, yeah. They were going on lunch, and we're like, well, my husband goes, I know what we're doing. We followed them to this place in the middle of a residential area that I'm pretty sure doesn't have an ad anywhere. And found like some amazing food. It was the best thing we ate that trip. But you have to be unafraid of food poisoning. That's like what I'm trying to say. Or unafraid of adventure, to try something new. And I mean, eat things on menus that you don't understand what they are or what you can't read the language.
So one thing that I think
got really good or really bad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. One thing that I think is a little bit safer, and it gives you a good idea of local, but also some of the most popular things that are sometimes hard to actually get your hands on, is to do a food tour in a city. Mm-hmm. So, and these are in almost every major metropolitan area. So you did one in South Beach, right?
Yes, Miami. Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's one in New York that I know is really Brooklyn centered. And then there's
one in Durham that my husband's
yes,
done.
Yes, there is. I work there. And didn't you said you'd done a couple in Columbia, right, Andy?
Yeah, we have. Actually, in the Lexington area, they've done a couple.
And is it, when you're saying food tours, just to, like the ones that you guys have been in, is it simply a food tour, or is it like a roast beef tour, or a wine tour?
So in South Beach, we hit, I don't know, I guess it was about four restaurants, Lindsay, four or five?
I felt like it was maybe more the, it was a glorious, I think it was like five or
we
six.
Had, so most but of the places.
It was all wide variety of samples.
Yeah, it's like little tastings and you have to buy your own drinks. Well, we did. I mean, I think the first restaurant they gave us a drink. And then, but the other ones, if we wanted a drink, and then it ended with like gelato. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of cool because the architecture in South Beach is just amazing with the Art Deco and stuff. So, they talked a little bit about that. They showed us the street where Miami Vice was, like the beginning of Miami Vice was filmed, where they're walking on the street. So it was kind of cool, you know, very kitschy. And I mean, I could do it again,
actually. It was just called a food tour.
Foodie walking tour. We got it from not the Shore Excursion Group is the ones that.
Yeah, and there's one in Nassau called Tastes of Nassau. There's also a chocolate one in Nassau too. Mm-hmm. There's often beer ones. Now the beer ones tend to be just beer. You won't usually find a lot of food.
I think we should look for one in New Orleans.
Yeah. There'll be actually New Orleans isn't really known for their beer. We could just do a pub crawl
there. I meant
there.
Food.
Oh, food.
They're
known for their food, right?
If you're in Anchorage, Alaska, there are a couple fantastic beer tours from a company called Big Swigs. And I just had the pleasure of doing one of them. And they do take you to Midnight Sun Brewery, and they have an incredible menu there. The food is out of this world. And they brought out, she brought out full-size appetizers for everybody. So we did get to eat on that one. Some of the beer ones you can.
Yeah.
They don't want you filling up too much on beer.
Because there are some breweries that just don't serve food. Like, and in the great state of North Carolina, there's all sorts of rules about that. So it is harder to find a brewery that serves food as well. They exist. They absolutely exist. And some of the best ones have food.
But I think that's one of the things that makes Alaska a little unique is because they, I think they have quite a few breweries there that do serve food because they get it all, something about the licensing and, mm-hmm. rules and
how things. About you, Andy? The tours you did, were they just food tours or?
Well, I did two different ones. The one I actually did in Lexington was more heavily wine focused. So it was more like a food and wine pairing place. So we'd go to different places and they show their house wine or their special wine, whatever is their top seller, and pair it with one of their best foods. And it was just a little tasting. And we went to like three or four different places. And I did one in Charleston when I was looking into culinary school down there.
Oh, that was a good one.
They actually took us just to different places and we had cocktails and appetizers at one, and we had dinner at the other and a dessert. I can't even think of where all we went, but it was, they took you on a bus around and just let you see all of Charleston, and that's such a great place to drive around anyway and get a little bit of history. But it was heavily food focused. There was a pairing, but it was more about the food.
Yeah.
I have clients who are heading to Los Angeles, and it's a mom and her 15-year-old daughter, and we just set up a cupcake tour for them.
That'd be so cool.
Wow.
There's definitely one of those in New York City, as well as like a you can do a gelato tour. Like you can be really specific with your desserts, or you can just do a sweets tour and get like a sampling of.
Yeah, and there were several pizza tours, like in Santa Monica and all different neighborhoods. You could go to, you know, we probably found 5 or 6 different pizza tours.
Nice.
But they opted for the as the mom said, they wanted to fit back into the airplane seats and they came out of it. So they opted just for the cupcake tour.
I don't know, the cupcake tour.
Over pizza. One's better than the other.
I don't know. I have to do both.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I really like about it, though, is because, like you touched on, you get to experience the city, you get to see the architecture, you get to learn about the history, and especially the ones that are you know, given by local guides who've been there their whole lives, they can give you insights of the city. It's a great introductory tour to a destination. It's one of those things you want to do your first night and then find out, you know, hey, maybe I want to go back and experience the rest of the menu here, or I want to, or I've got another recommendation and go do that. And then it's also something you might want to do if you want to be a local tourist in your own area. Mm-hmm. Like I don't live too far away from Seattle, but that's probably the one I've done the most. And every time I do it, it's a completely different experience. I've done the Pike Place Market food tours 4 times.
And I don't even know if this is quote a food tour or maybe an offshoot of what we're talking about, but looking to see if the city you're in has a farmer's market.
Yes.
Or a marketplace, you know, both domestically and internationally. You know, oftentimes at those markets, those open air markets, you can also find kind of, you know, little tastes of things and places that you may not have ever gotten the taste before.
That's actually a really nice segue to what I wanted to talk about next, which is local cooking classes as well. If you listened to our episode about Paris just recently, when my family went, we did a cooking class that was family friendly. The kids were able to participate. It was, I think, 3 or 4 courses. I'm just trying to count right now. There was a beet salad, and then there was a chicken thing, and there was a vegetable, and then there was
a
dessert.
Did your kids eat the beets?
Yeah, actually, they really liked it. They probably liked it more than I did. But because it was covered with balsamic vinegar, which that's got to be the one food that I just do not understand. Everybody loves it so much, and I am not a fan. But anyway, the beets are okay, though. Beets just make me crazy because they turn everything purple, and that's just weird to me. But anyway, there's an optional add-on to that, which we did not choose to do because I was kind of afraid to have my children sort of set loose in a market. But you can, before the tour, go to the market with the chef, and he will pick out the food for the course. And one person who was in our class did that with him before. And he said it was really interesting because the chef was telling me, well, I know we have younger children coming, so we're going to, you know, we can't be quite as adventurous, but obviously he didn't, you know, tone it all the way down. But that's why we had chicken, you know. And but that can make, if you haven't been to a market before, or if you have and you've been intimidated by it, that can be a good way to sort of experience the market with somebody who knows it, who can sort of hold your elbow and say, hey, come try this piece of fruit, or come, you know. Mm-hmm. And especially like if you're going to a market in Asia or something like that, where there's a lot of food there that you don't even know what it is.
Scorpions on a stick.
Like scorpions on a stick. And you're like, is that a scorpion on the stick? And then your guy could be like, yes, it is a scorpion on a stick. Okay. So that can be a really good way to get the experience of the market in a less intimidating way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, kind of a segue from that is that now there are even Holland America has the America's Test Kitchen right on their ships. Yeah. And so they are offering all kinds of cooking classes and cake decorating classes on the ship, and then special excursions. I have a couple who just went and did that in April. And in San Juan, the husband and wife went and made their own, I'm laughing because I'm remembering he loved everything about that trip, but just about everywhere they went, there was some kind of rum punch. And I said to him, you seem really happy. And he was like, it's the rum punch. but at that, they learned how to make mojitos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which he said, I would have never, that's something you've never tried at it, you know, if you hadn't made it himself.
That was actually something that we did on the Adventures by Disney Costa Rica thing. They had a mojitos class, which the kids had like a rum punch, it was without rum, a fruit punch recipe to make. But they actually showed us how to muddle the drink. And, my husband isn't much of a drinker, but he loves mojitos now because he's, you know, he got to make them himself.
Puerto Rico did me. Oh, my God. Those were so good.
The food, whatever we... What was the restaurant we ate at the first night?
That dive down the street that looked like it was...
The dive down the street that had the most...
Yeah.
The food there was so good, but those mojitos, yeah. And I haven't had one since that's tasted, you know, as good. Although I really liked the one I had in Cuba. I liked that one a lot more. But, you know...
They are hard to find a really good mojito. So many people don't know how to make it. Mm-hmm. But commenting on what you're saying about your husband likes it now, I mean, it's cooking classes or cooking at home, of course, is such a great way to get people to try things they've never tried before. I know when I cook with my niece and nephew and even my husband sometimes, they'll try something because they actually had the hands-on experience. Mm-hmm. So apart from experiencing the culture, if you're doing one of these on your vacation, it really is such a fantastic bonding experience, something that I know I never forget, and I hope they won't forget either.
Right. It's a life skill too. You're really, learning something that you need to know. I have a question for you, Andy, because you've gone to culinary school, and I actually, you know, a lot of us are like, one day I'd like to go to culinary school, whether we mean that or not, is, you know, but that seems to be like a bucket list item for people. And I actually took a vacation with my mom and my sister one time years ago to New York City to a real cooking school. They had a program where you could just go for a week, and you know, it could, you know, it might be Italian food or it might be baking or whatever, and you could just do that. We loved it. I kind of failed miserably at it, but I learned a lot. We did a balsamic vinegar tasting, which I did not enjoy, but I did enjoy the class overall. Would you do that? Having been to culinary school, is that something that you would actually choose to do as a vacation, or are you like,
absolutely,
no, really?
I mean, because culinary school really gives you such a great basis, but to go someplace that I really didn't have an emphasis in, like if I got to go to Paris or Asia, you'll learn something that you didn't get to learn in culinary school. Maybe not a technique, but a recipe or an ingredient you've never used. I mean, because you have to remember in culinary school, they're having to have ingredients for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you don't get to have all of those exotic ingredients there. They'll tell you how to do it, but you don't get to experience it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, and my friend did something very similar to yours, Elizabeth. And he was in Greensboro. He was a seminary student. He's wound up now working in development, you know, for university. But all his life, he had talked about to his wife, I wish I'd been a chef. I wish I'd been a chef. I wish I'd been a chef. And she found him about 6 years ago in the culinary place in New York City. And he went for a 7-day artisan bread course. And that's all they did was learn how to make artisan bread. And she said it was the best money she ever spent. All the time.
I'm going to send my husband, ladies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Then there's all this pressure. You come home and everybody's like, so when are you going to make me some gnocchi?
What did you learn?
So, well, and I had a client go to China recently, and they did lots of things on that trip, you know, toured lots of places, and they had a private guide. It was actually a really high-end trip. But her favorite thing that she experienced was a dumpling making class. Mm-hmm. And it was in a private home with, you know, this Chinese lady. And so you're not only learning about how to make a dumpling, which is actually kind of an art form in itself, but there's so much history in that food as well. So you're getting, again, that history lesson.
And that's an immersion too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's an authentic cultural experience that you're, you know, you're never going to forget. That's
Yeah, we actually, a few podcasts ago when we were doing the how to take a trip on less than $5,000 or that series, I found a dumpling making class in Chicago at the Chinese Cultural Center that they offer. And, you know, it's right there, right in the midst of this huge Chinese Cultural Center. What a great way to kind of know that part of Chicago and that history of Chicago and have an amazing meal at the same time.
Well, and so much of our history ties into food, or our food ties into history. You know, we eat in a certain way because history forces, you know, the whatever's going on at the time forces us to do that. Take, for example, Spam. So, you know, there's little things that come into existence at a certain time. And actually, one tour that I am dying to do in New York City, and I will do it, and we will podcast about it, is the Speakeasy Tour. If you know, just imagine, like, all these, and these places are still, like, apparently one of them is literally in the back of a Five Guys. So you knock on this door in the back. They're still hidden, and people don't generally know about them. And so you go to like three or four of them, and then they sort of talk about Prohibition and how they came to be. And you know, it just seems like the coolest thing. And these are all handcrafted cocktails that you're getting. It's all like real legit. You know, no margarita mix here, folks. This is like legit gin, vodka, you know, whiskey drinks. So yeah, I totally want to do that.
I think we need to put that on a books to go do that. That should be a team building exercise.
Yeah. It ties into what Andy was saying too about children. You know, it's like children are going to remember. It's like, you know, if you can combine the food and the history together, they're really going to remember that, as well as, you know, expanding their palates in a way that you may have never imagined they would expand their palates by, you know, trying something in an environment where they're, you know, actively engaged in it, and, you know, where everybody's eating it, and, you know, it's not like they can just want to get their peanut butter and jelly, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it's like, you know, if you think of ways to incorporate that into your travel, it can really be a way for children, you know, it takes in all the different ways of people learning, you know, it's they hearing about it, and they're seeing about it, and they're touching about it, and smelling about it, you know, every sense is involved.
Yeah.
It takes the unknown out of it. And I think for me, like, I used to be a picky eater, not Robin level picky, but I was right.
Poor Robin.
Like, I used to only eat cheese pizza. I wouldn't have any toppings, no tomatoes, no onions, no anything. And I think as I had more of these food experiences, and it kind of took that, you know, the unknown out of those ingredients. For kids, I can only assume is probably, you know, that, oh, I don't want to eat that. I don't know what's in that. When you have them sit down and actually go through the recipe and bring it to life themselves, it kind of takes probably that unknown factor of these. It's, well, this ingredient's, I'm familiar with it now. I've smelled it. I've cut it. I know what, you know, maybe it's not as mysterious or as scary as it could be. And that's very true for adults that are big chickens like myself.
And, well, the opposite end of the kids thing is it's romantic.
Absolutely.
You know, what a great way to be on a trip together. And, you know, we don't, you know, I was just reading an article today about how so few families eat, or people eat together. Mm-hmm. We are not a culture that enjoys a meal together. And so to kind of deepen that bond with someone you're, you know, either currently with or in a relationship with or pursuing a relationship with is to cook and taste and, you know, then have those a dish you know how to make together.
Well, a lot of people don't cook because they don't know how, because nobody ever taught them. And I'll generalize a lot of the time it's men, but it's not always. I mean, you know, a lot of people were, especially if you were raised with a mother who loves to cook it, but is a control freak in the kitchen, then nobody else in the house gets to learn how to cook. And so.
Or if you're raised with a mother whose gourmet meal is steakums.
Yeah. So either way, by taking a couple of cooking classes, you can really boost your confidence. And I took a knife skills class at a Sur La Table in San Francisco just because I had a few hours, you know, when I was visiting where I didn't really have time to do much, but I could do that. And just to take a class like that, just when you have some time, a downtime in your day, can really boost your confidence in the kitchen to where you're willing to do something different.
And people are more willing to usually explore and do things when they're on vacation than they are when they're at home. And one of the things I've been trying to challenge myself to do is to do types like things like this at home. And all of these restaurants you're talking about that kind of offer these cooking experiences or these individual family experiences, they're kind of popping up everywhere because foodie, it's become a culture. It's become an entity on its own. It used to be this thing that maybe a few people would travel on their stomach, and now it's become so mainstream that everybody is involved. And I'm looking, there's Orchard Kitchen, seriously, four blocks from my house, there is a really great restaurant that does cooking classes like this. I'm going to drag myself.
Yeah, totally. And you know, that sensory recall for a trip too. If you have a dish that you really like and you ask at the restaurant, you know, can I have the recipe for this? There's a lot of places that will give you the recipe card. And even if it's not exact, it's really close, you know, because they're making it in bulk. So it's always going to, and they probably have access to some better ingredients than you
That's
might.
It's like full circle back to the food and wine.
Yeah, it is right back to
you
the food
You can get
and
all
wine.
Those recipes.
Oh, but Disney will lie sometimes. I know that you've pulled with them some of those ingredients.
I know. Right? Well, and I have this old Disney cookbook that's like, it calls for 1.5 pounds of fettuccine and then like 4 15-count shrimp. And I'm like, who on earth? And it feeds 2 people. Like, what 2 people are going to eat 1.5 pounds? Yeah, I mean, that's, and then finding 15-count shrimp, the only place I've ever seen them. Honestly, in a market was in Austin, Texas, at the big grocery store there. They're as big as your fist. They're huge.
Every year I get the recipe, I buy the cookbooks for Food and Wine Festival. And every year I come home with this, like, I'm going to make this and this is going to be so delicious. And I don't know, something about, you know, the air there makes you.
Yeah, really think that you're going to go out and.
Makes you wear Mickey Mouse shirts all the time.
Stock up on heavy cream.
It is really special when, especially at Disney, when the chef will come out and talk to you when you ask for a recipe, because now they don't have a written down as much, but when they come out and actually talk to you and explain the process, it's just such a great experience. There's some ingredients and recipes that I love now, mostly because he took the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that must be one of your favorite things about the Food and Wine Festival in general, because you do have way more access during the Food and Wine Festival to the chefs. Mm-hmm. They're walking around, and especially if you go right at the beginning, they'll come out, and I've had several very magical Mickey moments in line where the chef has come out and talked to, because of the company I keep, has come out and blessed us with kind of an overview of the samplings and actually walked us through different things. And that's just such a wonderful, wonderful thing to experience, even as I'm never going to be a chef, but I have come home and made leek soup, and it was probably enough to feed you and all of your families and everyone that I threw out so much of it. It was awful. I tried to freeze it and I didn't do it right. And I mean, our whole freezer at one point in time was just full of soup.
Well, but one thing about the chefs at Disney, I hate to use the term dumb it down, but he explained things that I didn't necessarily need to have explained, but I know a lot of people would, and it really made it easy. There was a corn risotto is the recipe I'm talking about that was just phenomenal. I had it at 2 restaurants at Disney, and I finally was like, I have to have this recipe because it's so light, and I've never had a risotto that is this summer light. And he came out and was saying that it was like, well, you know, you can actually milk the corn if you just kind of take the back of your knife and get the corn cob. It's like, well, yes, I know that, but it was really so impressive. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's something that I think even the kids kind of could follow along, and it was a science lesson for them that something they wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, I hate to cut this short, although it's not short. It's very long, and people are getting to the end of their treadmill. Scott's getting to the end of his run, so we need to go ahead and cut this off. But we are, Outlander Travel does have a group going to Food and Wine Festival later this year. I believe this is the first weekend in November. Is that when the group is?
Yep.
Around that time. So you can contact your Outlander Travel agent if you would like to experience it for yourself, and then we will, of course, talk about it one more time on the podcast. Just one more. This will be the last time, I'm sure. So
yeah, we're never going to mention
never that again. So that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com. Then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Sandy, Lindsay, Laura, and our special guest, Andy, plus myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly!